on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Good evening. You're listening to Body Talk here on Phoenix 98 FM with me, Mel Watson. Hope you're having another happy and healthy week and enjoying the sunshine. Start off with the usual news roundup and then on to some more subjects a little bit more in depth, including natural painkillers, a little bit about COPD, about just natural things, using natural things to help you heal your body. Right, first of all, the news roundup. Sunlight, I just mentioned there, sunshine, some gloriously sunny days. But some lack of sunlight could be one cause of the obesity epidemic amongst children. It's certainly a possibility after vitamin D supplements helped a group of overweight and obese adolescents lose a substantial amount of weight after 1 year. Now, our bodies hold onto fat stores when we're deficient in vitamin D, which we mainly get from sunlight, especially during the summer months. And countering this deficiency seems to give the signal to the body to release stores of fat, as researchers from the University of Athens Medical School discovered when they gave supplements to a group of obese and overweight children and adolescents. Around half the children were given vitamin D supplements, which they took every day for a year, and the rest were given a placebo or a fake supplement. By the end of the year, the supplement group had lost significant amounts of body fat, their BMI had dropped, and their cholesterol levels had also improved. Parents should ask to have the vitamin D levels of their overweight children checked, say the researchers. And household cleaners and disinfectants could be another cause of the obesity epidemic amongst infants and toddlers. The products change the children's gut microbiome, which helps regulate their weight, new researchers discovered. The only safe cleaning agents to use are eco-friendly ones, which don't have the same bad effects. Infants who live in homes where standard disinfectants were used at least once a week were twice as likely to have higher levels of gut microbes, which are linked to weight gain. Children who were overweight or obese by the time they were 3 years old had changed bacteria in their gut microbiome when they were 4 months old. Now, researchers at the University of Alberta in Canada found a direct link between a changed gut microbiome with a depletion of bacteria and an increase of some other bacteria. I'm not going to even try and pronounce the names, it's too much. The number of times the disinfectants, such as multi-surface cleaners, were used around the home kind of corresponded. The researchers analysed the gut flora of nearly 800 infants between 3 and 4 months of age and checked their weight from the age of one and until they were 3 years old. The children with raised levels of the gut bacteria as infants had a higher BMI by the time they were three. But those who lived in homes that used eco-friendly cleaning products weren't affected. These infants had different gut bacteria that didn't seem to influence weight gain, say the researchers. People who use eco-friendly products also tend to lead healthier lifestyles and eat a better diet, and this too may have had an influence on the children's weight. And cleaning up the air we breathe, especially in polluted regions of India and China, would have a bigger impact on improving health and longevity than finding a cure for breast and lung cancer. Poor air quality cuts a year off our lives on average, but that's a global figure. It's shortening the lives of those in polluted areas of Asia far more dramatically than it is in North America or Europe, where there are stricter controls. In real terms, air pollution is responsible for around 90,000 premature deaths in the US and 1.1 million deaths in India every year. Researchers from the University of Texas at Austin measured air pollution, specifically particulate matter, smaller than 2.5 microns in 185 countries. Now, pollution comes from power plants, cars and trucks, fires and agriculture and industrial emissions, and it's known to increase the risk of heart attacks, strokes, respiratory diseases and cancer. Creating cleaner air is one of the most significant things we can do to improve health, the researchers say, and it's considerably larger than the benefit and survival we might see if we found cures for both lung and breast cancer combined. So air pollution is a real problem, isn't it? Particularly in the warmer weather as well. And you shouldn't get water into your contact lenses. This simple piece of advice can stop wearers from getting an infection that's tripled in incidence in the past few years, which can cause blindness. People sometimes clean their lenses with public water or get water in their lenses when they swim. But this increases the risk of an infection with an acanthamoeba keratitis. probably said that wrong too. Researchers at University College London say they have seen a threefold increase in cases since 2011, and contact lens wearers are more likely to get infected, usually because of poor hygiene. People who don't follow good hygiene practices, such as not using a good cleaning solution or showering, washing or swimming while wearing the lenses, are three times more likely to get infected, the researchers say. Although the risk is greater for those who use reusable contacts, it's still there for those who use daily disposables. Trying to understand why some become infected, the research discovered that hygiene was a key factor, and people who wear reusable contact lenses need to make sure that they thoroughly wash and dry their hands before handling contact lenses and avoid wearing them while swimming, face washing or bathing. Now, cases are rare, although they have increased from just 10 up to 65 a year in the UK in the past few years. It affects just 5 out of every 200,000 contact lens wearers, and around a quarter of those infected could go blind in some cases. And in some cases as well, a corneal transplant is possible. So look after your lenses. And sleep. Oh, sleep is always a problem, isn't it? It's such a big problem for so many of us. We shouldn't get too much and we shouldn't have too little. So the optimum amount of sleep is 6 to 8 hours. And getting more or less than that over the years could cause health problems such as heart disease or stroke, researchers say. Oversleepers seem to be at greater risk. Those who constantly sleep more than 8 hours run a 33% increased risk for cardiovascular disease. Those who sleep less than 6 hours have an 11% higher risk. But the occasional bad night's sleep isn't going to make a big difference. The researchers tracked the sleeping habits of more than 1 million people for over 9 years and divided them into three groups: undersleepers, oversleepers, and those who slept 6 to 8 hours a day. Researchers from the Onassis Cardiac Surgery Centre in Athens say they aren't sure why sleep should influence health, but think it may have something to do with glucose metabolism, blood pressure, and inflammation. Having the odd short night or lie-in is unlikely to be detrimental to health, but evidence is accumulating that prolonged nightly sleep deprivation or excessive sleeping should be avoided. Regular sleeping habits and avoiding caffeine and alcohol before bed, having a healthy diet and regular exercise can all help achieve the sleeping sweet spot, the researchers say. So that's good, isn't it? It's so difficult, isn't it, getting the right amount of sleep. Because we just wake up, don't we? For no apparent reason. It's so difficult to get back to sleep again. But changing the time when you eat breakfast and dinner could be a quick way to lose some body fat. Eating breakfast 90 minutes later and dinner 90 minutes earlier and yet still eating as much as you wish between those two times could help you lose double the body fat compared to sticking to the usual meal times. Although there are no restrictions on what or how much you eat, you're dramatically reducing your window of when you can eat and essentially introducing a mini fast. Ultimately, you'll eat less because you'll be less hungry, say researchers from the University of Surrey. But although people lost body fat, more than half who took part in the experiment said that their lifestyles prevented them from following the new meal times beyond the 10 weeks of the trial. For the experiment, the participants were put into two groups, those who altered their meal times and those who ate at their usual time. They kept food diaries during the trial, and researchers discovered that those who had a later breakfast and earlier dinner were eating less, even though there were no dietary restrictions. They said they felt less hungry and had been cutting back on snacks between meals. And the researchers also wonder if the longer fasting periods after dinner contributed to the fat loss as well. So that's entirely possible, isn't it? And finally, smokers who are trying to cut back by vaping every day are running a very high risk of a heart attack. The practice, which is common amongst smokers, increases the chances of an attack fivefold. Even vaping on its own nearly doubles the risk of a heart attack. Many smokers are also vaping because they think it's a safe way to cut back on cigarettes. But they will be better off just smoking the real thing, say researchers from the University of California in San Francisco. Not that either approach is great. People who just vape, smoking e-cigarettes, nearly double the risk of a heart attack. But those who vape and continue smoking raise their chances fivefold compared to a non-smoker, the researchers found after surveying nearly 70,000 people. One piece of good news is that people who quit cigarettes see their heart attack risk drop significantly. While people may think they're reducing their health risks, they found that the heart attack risk of e-cigarettes adds to the risk of smoking cigarettes. Using both products at the same time is worse than using either one separately. Gosh, electronic cigarettes are thought to be safer because they deliver an aerosol of nicotine by heating a liquid. But while they're producing lower levels of carcinogens, they send out ultrafine particles and other toxins that have been linked to cardiovascular disease and non-cancerous lung problems. So vaping probably isn't a very good alternative to smoking. It's best if you can just give up the habit altogether. But and there are lots of different techniques, ways, etc., that I have covered in various other shows about giving up. So, yeah, good to look into that. Right, we're going to have a little break now. And after the break, I'll be back looking at natural remedies for different ailments, such as pain. Natural painkillers, that sounds good, doesn't it? Okay, stay tuned for more right after this.
You can say what you want, but I won't change my mind. I feel
community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Body Talk here on Phoenix 98 FM with me, Mel Watson. And yes, we're talking natural remedies and natural painkiller remedies as well. Now, NSAIDs or non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs such as aspirin and ibuprofen can sometimes trigger stomach bleeds, and aspirin in particular increases the risk of hemorrhage, stroke or bleeding on the brain, and these risks multiply with age, and those over 75 have a sevenfold increased risk of hemorrhage, stroke when they take aspirin. So it's probably a good idea. I'm not saying not to take them, but obviously knowing that those are the side effects, or side effects with any medication in that manner. Natural effective painkillers or painkilling therapies that are safer and just effective, I think, need to be investigated. There are lots of them, and many of them have been tested in independent trials. And I'll go over a few of them for you now, because I do think they're worth thinking about. Now, firstly, there's Tai Chi, which is a slow motion exercise from China, which incorporates deep breathing with deliberate movement. It helps ease chronic neck pain. It was tested on 114 people who had been suffering from chronic neck pain for at least 3 months, and some did Tai Chi for 12 weeks, and the rest either did conventional neck exercises or carried on with their usual pain management, such as drugs or massage. And by the end of the study, the Tai Chi group reported less pain, disability, and an overall improvement in their lives compared to the non-exercise group. That's according to researchers from Harvard University, and earlier studies have also found that this exercise can help ease back pain and rheumatism too. So that's worth investigating. And even if there aren't classes that you want to go to at the moment, then there are certainly online classes that you can attend. But I think most classes are starting to get back into action again. Certainly my yoga class is back into action again, which is really good after all these months. And then there's the Alexander technique. Now, poor posture can often be the unsuspected cause of chronic pain. So it follows that getting the posture correct can help alleviate pain. And studies of the Alexander technique, which focuses on conscious corrections to the way we stand and walk, seem to support this. In one study, it was tested alongside standard care, which were painkillers and exercise, and acupuncture in a group of 500 people suffering from general neck pain for at least 3 months. Having either 12 acupuncture sessions or 20 Alexander lessons achieved a 30% reduction in pain and disability, compared to a 23% reduction in those receiving only standard care. That was what researchers from York University discovered. And placebos. Now, harnessing the power of our minds to overcome pain is the most tested and proven method around. In most drug trials, patients are given either the active drug or a dummy pill, the placebo, instead, and often neither group knows which pill they've been given. Researchers from McGill University have looked at the success of the placebo in 84 trials that had tested the effectiveness of painkilling drugs. And in almost every trial, the placebo was as effective as the drug, with an average 30% pain reduction reported for both. The strangest phenomenon of all is that the power of the placebo seems to be increasing and is now as effective as the painkillers. Wow. And, of course, there's acupuncture. Now, I'm not sure if acupuncture is on the list of allowed remedies at the moment, but certainly when it does come back, this will be worth looking at too. I mean, this is acupuncture has been used in the East for thousands of years, and Western researchers have come up with plenty of research that demonstrates it's an effective therapy. Now, despite the evidence, many skeptics argue that it can't work because it's implausible. But researchers have discovered that the meridian points used in acupuncture mimic the same biological pathways that painkillers target. Specifically, stomach meridian point 36 mirrors the hypothalamus, pituitary, adrenal, HPA axis, which is the biological pathway that produces stress hormones and is associated with chronic pain. And then, of course, there are herbal remedies. Plenty of herbal remedies can help for specific aches and pains. Feverfew, often called medieval aspirin, has anti-inflammatory qualities that can ease all sorts of pain, and studies have shown it's especially effective for headaches and migraines. Lavender is another effective treatment for migraine pain. As an essential oil, it can be inhaled for 15 minutes during a migraine attack. And turmeric, also known as devil's claw, has a good track record for relieving back pain. St. John's wort is best known as a mild antidepressant, but it's been used for centuries as a remedy for arthritis, back pain, and general aches and pains in the joints. And then, of course, there is the fashionable CBD oil, which comes from the therapeutic element of cannabis. It's a pain reliever that can help with neuropathic pain, which can afflict people suffering from trauma and diabetes. It's also an anti-inflammatory, with a large body of literature showing its effectiveness at reducing inflammation-related pain in animals and human patients. And something that is called therapeutic touch. But it doesn't involve any form of touching at all, so that may be well be on the list of treatments that are available now. Non-contact therapeutic touch is an incredibly powerful pain reliever. One study on a group of 90 people who were suffering chronic pain after surgery tested this against a placebo or doing nothing. Around 73% in the NCTT group reported a significant reduction in pain, needed less pain medication, and slept better at night, researchers from the University of Missouri found. NCTT practitioners say they are channeling life energy through their hands to patients in a four-phase process: centering, assessment, unraveling the field, and intervention. So there we are. There's some lovely pain-relieving techniques there that will really help and definitely worth trying. And some natural reliefs for fighting colds. Now, obviously, with the COVID crisis still with us, I'm not necessarily saying that any of these are going to relieve COVID or anything like that, but they may well be worth considering. If you are feeling that your health is at all compromised, or maybe just for boosting your immune system. There are plenty of options when it comes to combating colds and coughs naturally, and considering most conventional remedies don't work, and you know, it's just nice to try some drug-free routes, really, isn't it? Taking zinc supplements throughout the winter could stop you getting as many colds, and certainly stop the children getting as many colds, according to one study. And if they do get a cold, or if you do get a cold, taking the mineral within the first day of symptoms starting can significantly shorten the time that you're sick. Vitamin C obviously is vital for a well-functioning immune system, and vitamin C taken daily can shorten a cold when one hits by nearly 20% and also reduces its severity. Probiotics as well are good bacteria, and taking these good bacteria through the winter months can help fend off fevers, colds and runny noses. So look out for the Lactobacillus acidophilus, NCFM, and Bifidobacterium animalis strains, which have been proven to work for colds in kids. And then, I'm saying lots of long words with this, Pelargonium cidoides. And if you've never heard of it, it's an obscure herb known as African geranium or umkalobo. It appears to be a useful natural remedy for coughs and colds in kids. And it is available in health stores and obviously online, but it is a nice natural remedy. And in children, it's shown that this herbal remedy can help resolve coughs, especially wet or chesty coughs, and relieve sore throats. And then there's nasal rinsing, or neti, as we call it in yoga. It's a technique where you use a container called a neti pot filled with a salt water solution to flush out the nasal passages. It's a cheap and effective option for both preventing and treating colds. It can help clear a blocked nose, soothe a sore throat, and even reduce the chances of getting sick again. So a neti pot or a nasal cup. You can buy them with ready-made nasal saline salt packs to use with them, and they're available online or from health food stores and pharmacies. But make sure that you learn how to do the technique, and then you could get your kids to do it as well. They'll probably find it great fun. You have to just first of all mix up a solution to make salt water using lukewarm water, and then lean over the sink so that you're looking down into the basin. Turn your head slightly to one side and gently place the spout of the nasal cup into your upper nostril so that it forms a comfortable seal, and be sure not to press the spout against the middle part of your nose. And then you need to pour the solution, tipping the nasal cup so that the solution pours into your upper nostril. Make sure to breathe through your mouth, and the solution will drain out through your other nostril. And when the cup is empty, you breathe out through both nostrils to clear away any extra salt water and mucus. And then gently blow your nose into a tissue, and then you repeat the process for the other side. And I can thoroughly recommend that. It does really work well. So there's a few cough and cold remedies. Right, and we'll be carrying on with our natural remedies after the break. So stay tuned for more after this.
Radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Body Talk here on Phoenix 98 FM with me, Mel Watson. And we're talking natural remedies this week. So things that you can do where you don't have to reach for the medicine cupboard. It's always good if you can find something a little bit more natural, because obviously most medications come with a few side effects, don't they? So healing minor wounds, what can we do for that? Now, the body's natural ability to heal wounds is amazing, but if you're not eating well and getting enough essential nutrients, that automatic process can be significantly impaired. But there are some things you can do to boost your body's natural repair mechanisms, as well as tried and tested topical treatments you can use to speed healing of just irritating cuts and bumps when they happen. Now, protein is vital for building and repairing the body's tissues, and not getting enough of it has been linked to delayed wound healing. Make sure you eat a healthy, balanced diet that includes plenty of protein from sources such as meat, fish, dairy, nuts and beans. And don't worry if you're vegan, because there are some things that you can eat for vegan protein as well, such as beans and legumes, chickpeas, green peas, lentils, kidney beans, black beans, pinto beans and peanuts. And then there are seeds, chia seeds, pumpkin seeds, flax or linseed, sunflower seeds, sesame seeds, and grains such as oats, brown and wild rice, quinoa, buckwheat, teff and millet. And then nuts, almonds, walnuts, cashews, Brazil nuts, pistachios, and vegetables, asparagus, broccoli, kale, spinach, edamame, Brussels and sprouts. So there are lots of protein sources there for vegans. And taking supplements as well. Certain nutrients, particularly zinc, arginine and vitamins A, C and E, appear to play an important role in wound healing. So supplementing with them may help, especially if you're deficient. In fact, vitamin C has been put to the test in clinical trials and found to speed the healing of a variety of wounds, from leg ulcers to surgical wounds. And arginine supplements have been shown to improve wound healing in the elderly. So a qualified health practitioner can advise on the best dosages. And then there's herbs. A moist herbal compress can be used for healing minor wounds, and you could soak a sterile gauze compress in pre-boiled filtered water with a herbal tincture or dried herb added to it. Place it over the wound and change it regularly over several days. You can use chamomile for poorly healing wounds, balm of Gilead for painful wounds, arnica montana for bruising and swelling but not on broken skin, marigold for inflamed and irritated wounds, and aloe vera, which has moisturizing, anti-inflammatory and antiseptic effects. And bee products as well are very good for healing. Honey and propolis, they're proving to be powerful wound healers when used topically. Honey is, I mean, everybody's probably got a jar of honey in their kitchen, but it's well known for being an effective treatment for infected wounds. It has antibacterial and anti-inflammatory properties and has even been found to heal wound infections where antibiotics have failed. But not all honeys are created equal. Go for medical grade honey, such as Medihoney, which has been specially formulated for topical use and is licensed for wound care in Australia, Europe and the US. And I think Manuka honey is probably in a similar category there. And then propolis is a sticky substance made by bees from plant resins. It possesses antibacterial, anti-inflammatory and regenerative properties, making it ideal for wound healing. It's been successfully used to treat diabetic foot ulcers. And when a propolis cream was pitted against the topical antibiotic silver sulfadiazine in patients with minor burns, the two treatments were just as effective in terms of antimicrobial activity, but the propolis treated wounds showed less inflammation and more rapid healing. So bees, we need to look after our bees, don't we, and our honey. I think they're in short supply at the moment, an endangered species, so we need to make more use of them. Save our bees. And then COPD. Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease is an umbrella term for a group of lung diseases that narrow the airways and make it increasingly difficult to breathe. It includes the conditions chronic bronchitis, long-term cough with mucus, and emphysema, progressive destruction of the lungs. Most people with COPD have aspects of both. As well as a persistent cough, symptoms of COPD include wheezing, shortness of breath that gets worse with mild activity, fatigue, and frequent respiratory infections. Periods where symptoms become particularly bad are known as exacerbations or flare-ups. So, it's good news if people around you have stopped smoking, which is one of the causes of COPD, and stopping smoking is proven to reduce the progression of the disease. But there are a number of other lifestyle changes that can be made that can be effective, from taking supplements to practicing mind-body techniques. So what are those practices? First one is yoga. Very, very good. The combination of physical poses, deep breathing and meditation appears to be beneficial for COPD sufferers, improving lung function, tolerance to exercise and the distress that comes with difficulty breathing. Now, there are plenty of classes in the area, or you could consider having one-to-one sessions with a yoga therapist who could create a program tailored to your needs as well. It would be well worth it. And if yoga is not your cup of tea, try singing or playing the harmonica. Both involve breath control, which may help with lung health. In fact, one study found that twice weekly singing classes for 6 weeks resulted in positive physical changes as well as a reduction in anxiety among COPD sufferers. And harmonica playing was recently found to improve lung function and exercise capacity, obviously to do with the lungs, and obviously very helpful with the COVID problem at the moment as well, increasing lung health. And obviously Tai Chi once again. Tai Chi and Qigong are proving useful for COPD. According to a review of 10 trials, Tai Chi, Qigong or a combination of the two improve physical performance, lung function, shortness of breath and quality of life in people with COPD. So again, you know, try and find a class that's good for you, that you get on with the teacher. There's some good classes around. And taking supplements, it's best to work with an experienced practitioner who can recommend individual dosages and check for drug interactions and monitor potential side effects. But some things that could be good for you are the NAC supplement, N-acetylcysteine. It's a potent antioxidant and anti-inflammatory, and it's been found to cut the number of flare-ups in patients with moderate to severe COPD. And then there's coenzyme Q10. COPD sufferers seem to be lacking in this vitamin-like substance found in every cell of the body. And COQ10 supplements have been found to improve blood oxygenation, exercise performance and heart rate in people with COPD. And then there's good old vitamin D. Supplementing with this sunshine vitamin may reduce the risk of flare-ups in those who are D deficient. Consider getting your D levels tested to work out how much you need. And herbs as well. Herbal remedies could be helpful. Again, it's best to consult with a qualified practitioner for personalized advice, but there's pelargonium cydoides once again. Extracts of this herb appear to be a beneficial add-on therapy for patients with COPD, reducing the severity of symptoms, frequency of flare-ups and need for antibiotics, as well as boosting the quality of life. And you can now find this herb online in health stores, etc. So it's fairly easy to obtain. Now, breathing in cold air can trigger bronchospasm when the muscles in the lungs tighten and shorten, leading to shortness of breath. So wear a cold weather face mask if you're going out in low temperatures. Now, COPD is predicted to become the third leading cause of death and disability by 2030. Smoking, including passive smoking, is a key cause, although air pollution and occupational exposures to dust and chemicals are also known risk factors. So just make sure that you eat well. Malnutrition is common in COPD sufferers and can affect lung function and overall health. So it's crucial to eat a balanced diet that includes all of the essential nutrients, and also consider investigating the possibility of a food allergy, as COPD has been linked to allergies in some reports. So yeah, it's worth really investigating that, isn't it? It's allergies are strange things. You can be allergic to almost anything, can't you? So it's well worth investigating your body yourself for allergic reactions. I mean, hay fever obviously is a problem at this time of year, as it has been for a couple of months. As soon as the sun comes out, those little seeds and pollen etc. start flying through the air, and it really gets up our nose, doesn't it? Literally. So looking into allergies as well worth it. Right, we're going to be back with some more natural remedies, this time for skin conditions. We're looking at eczema, so stay tuned for more after this.
Bye.
community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Body Talk here on Phoenix 98 FM, and we're looking at natural remedies this week. So what natural remedies can you use? Well, we've covered quite a lot of subjects so far, but we're looking at skin conditions now and eczema. So eczema, or atopic dermatitis as it's medically known, is really the best way to treat it is to work out what's causing it or what's making it worse and then try to address it. But that's often easier said than done. A multitude of things can cause or trigger the condition, and they vary from person to person. Besides diet and the products you use around the home, you could also consider dust mites, pet dander, hard water, central heating, synthetic clothing, or chemical irritants in shampoos, bubble bath and body washes. So those are all things to consider. So again, on the allergy lines, but there are some things that you can take as well that could well help with your skin condition. Probiotics, especially Lactobacillus rhamnosus, GG, can help with childhood eczema. In a review of 13 trials, the good gut bacteria significantly reduced the severity of symptoms in more than half of them. And vitamin D. Could you be low in vitamin D? It's known to have a regulatory influence on both the immune system and skin barrier function, which are both critical in the development of eczema. And those who don't get enough of it are more likely to have the condition. Now, the good news is that taking a daily dose of vitamin D has been found to significantly improve symptoms. So that's good news, isn't it? So vitamin D, we're finding a lot of these same things are cropping up, aren't they? So you could be taking a natural remedy for one condition and other things clear up too. So topical treatments, conventional creams and ointments for treating eczema are usually steroid based, and they can often do more harm than good to the skin and may also affect other body systems. Even the basic emollients recommended to keep the skin moist, such as aqueous cream, can cause drying and thinning of the skin. But there are a number of effective natural options. And vitamin B12. Applying this vitamin directly to the skin appears to reduce the severity of eczema in adults and children alike. And one brand of B12 cream available online in the UK and US is LifeFlow. It's free of perfumes, petrochemicals, parabens and other harsh ingredients, and packed with hydrating and soothing botanicals like aloe vera gel and avocado oil. And then there are herbal ointments. A 10% ointment made from a 95% ethanol extract of Lupinus termis, which is a type of lupin, lupin seeds, can produce results comparable to those of topical steroids, while licorice, chamomile, witch hazel and St. John's wort creams or gels can also improve symptoms. So consider consulting with a qualified herbalist to create a specific remedy for you. And then commercial creams. There are lots of creams and ointments on the market claiming to ease eczema, but many contain harsh synthetic ingredients. So an all-natural formulation, such as Pure Potion Skin Salve Intensive Moisturising Ointment, which was created by a mother to heal her daughter's eczema, is loaded with natural moisturisers like safflower and hemp seed oil, as well as anti-inflammatory herbal extracts, including chamomile and chickweed. It also contains beeswax, which forms a semi-permeable barrier to lock moisture in while helping to keep external irritants out. Those good old bees again. And low levels of zinc have also been linked to eczema. In one study of children with low amounts of zinc in their hair, those who took zinc supplements saw a significant improvement in their itching and other symptoms compared to those not taking the mineral. And then fish oil. The omega-3 fats, DHA and EPA, found in fish oil appear to be useful for eczema. And in one study, DHA supplements significantly improved symptoms after just 2 months. So that's also a good thing to bear in mind, isn't it? So those are some good examples of what you can, natural remedies that you can use for your skin. And just going back to probiotics for a minute, I mean, in the health and wellness world, probiotics has become somewhat of a buzzword. And just like drinking fresh celery juice, taking probiotics can do wonders for gut health. But Unlike blindly jumping on the celery juice bandwagon, taking probiotics isn't just another health fad. Doctors and researchers have published countless studies about the very real, very tangible benefits of probiotics, and they're not only good for digestion. It turns out that adding supplements or foods with natural probiotics into your daily routine can leave you with clearer skin, a stronger immune system, a better mood, and more energy. So, how can you get these probiotics? They seem to be steeped in mystery. Since there are so many misconceptions about what they are and why they're so beneficial, it can be very confusing. So, what do you need to do? Where do you find your probiotics? So, there are a lot of misconceptions about probiotics, and some people say they don't really do anything, but you may have to try a couple of different products until you find the strains that are best for you. But they do work, and it's important to incorporate a probiotic into your daily health routine. It's best to take them at the same time every day, but some recommend that it's best to take them at night, and obviously don't stop start. You've got to take a continuous course. Now, a probiotic supplement is possibly better taken at night because that's when your digestive system is at its most relaxed and they can be their most effective. Each of the different probiotic supplements contains a slightly different mix of bacteria, so you may also want to switch up which brand you take after you go through a bottle. So it's, you know, finding out which one is best for you. And doctors and scientists are now only beginning to uncover the intimate relationship between a healthy gut and the rest of the body, skin, energy and mood, etc. And the gut and the skin are intimately connected through something called the gut-brain-skin axis. So having, this topic has been researched widely. It's become very clear that if your gut is inflamed, your skin will also be inflamed. So restoring a healthy gut microbiome through diet and supplements like probiotics is key to dialing down the inflammation, healing the gut and in turn healing the skin. So the gut health could be the core of all our health. If we have a healthy gut, we have a stronger immune system. We absorb and process the nutrients from our food, which helps keep our body in balance. And we can even have an improved mood with a more diverse gut. It's estimated that 90% of your serotonin, which is your body's feel-good neurotransmitter, is made in your digestive tract, and that the production of this chemical is reliant on healthy gut bacteria. Serotonin is responsible for regulating a number of body processes, such as sleep and digestion, but its main role is to regulate anxiety, happiness, and mood. In fact, low levels of serotonin have been associated with depression. Getting a variety of fermented foods in your diet like kimchi, yogurt, miso, kombucha and sauerkraut is important to encourage the diversity of your gut. So try finding a probiotic that contains both live strains and soil-based strains so you know you're getting a good variety, which I think is obviously important. So fermented foods nourish the good bacteria in your gut and help this bacteria stay balanced. When your gut bacteria is balanced, you're better able to absorb the nutrients from your food, which means your cells are getting what they need in order to perform optimally. And when you're deeply nourished on a cellular level, you have more energy, sleep better, and you're able to fight off any infection or sickness much more easily. Now, taking probiotics won't magically cure everything. It may certainly help, but it's only when you're willing to look at all the parts of you and make changes across your diet and lifestyle that true health and happiness can happen. So not all probiotics are created equal, though, as I was just saying. Just look at what the ingredients are, look at what could be good for you, and just give it a go and see if it agrees with you or not. So very interesting. I mean, there's so much stuff available now, isn't it? And all of it proclaims to be natural, it proclaims to be good for you. But if you start thinking along those lines, and not just with the probiotics as well, but thinking about having a much healthier diet, getting some exercise, I think all these things combined will help to boost your immune system, make you COVID resistant. Certainly, that's all at the forefront of our minds these days, and also make you more resistant to many of the other diseases that are also prevalent in our society today, which I think is of major importance. We tend to think that COVID is the huge danger at the moment, but there are many, many other things that should be on our list of priorities when looking after our health in addition to COVID. So that's it for this week. I hope you've enjoyed the show. I hope it's given you some good hints and tips as to what you can do for your health and to look after yourself. Until this time next week, take care of your body and take care of yourself.